Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Three-step drop. Oh, he is buried. He is sacked. It is Mario Williams back at midfield.
You got to give me that leg, whip. You got to give me that leg, whip.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Throws it downfield. Intercepted. Picked off by Jairus Byrd. The ball hawk with the interception for the Bills.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, we'll get to meet Bill's new defensive line coach, Pepper Johnson, after 14 years with the New England Patriots. Also on the show, the newly minted Hall of Famer, Andre Reed, joins us live at 8 o'clock, and we'll take a look back at the Super Bowl through the eyes of football analytics with Sam Monson of ProFootballFocus.com.
This place is pandemonium.
CJ at the 10, 5, touchdown! CJ Spiller, touchdown Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
You know, I don't know if it's because the Super Bowl is over, but all of a sudden the 2013 season seems like a long time ago. I mean, you hear those, I guess I haven't heard those highlights in a while, but listening to those highlights, I'm thinking, oh man, that was last year. It feels like last year. For the last couple of weeks, it felt like it was very close. That feels like a long time ago now. Maybe it's because we haven't had a live show on the radio in a while. Good evening. Welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live here from 7 to 9 p.m. tonight. Happy that you're able to tune in tonight. Want to thank Sal Capaccio, who filled in for us a couple of nights last week, Thursday and Friday, the hour show Thursday, 2 hours on Friday. Sal always does a great job and allowed us to get out of town and watch a little Big Ten basketball last Thursday night down in Ann Arbor. So thanks to Sal. We had a great time down there. Happy to be back. Happy to be doing a show, a live show, and we like our lineup tonight. Boy, do we ever. You heard the lineup. Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach. We're going to sit down with him, talk with him about leaving the Patriots after more than a decade there on their coaching staff, about playing against the Bills in Super Bowl 25. A lot to talk about with Pepper Johnson. He's going to take over the Bills' defensive line, the announcement coming last Friday night. He'll be in studio with us in a few minutes from now at the bottom of the hour or so. 8 o'clock, we have arrangements for Andre Reed to join us, the brand-new Hall of Famer from the Buffalo Bills. He'll be live on the line with us. You can phone in your comments and questions for Andre. I would think your congratulations would be in order. The Hall of Fame wide receiver from the Buffalo Bills, Andre Reed, will join us at 8 o'clock tonight. At 8:30, we'll take a look back at the Super Bowl through the eyes of football analytics with Sam Monson, who writes for PFF, ProFootballFocus.com. He wrote an analytics viewpoint of Sunday's game, in particular, what went wrong in Sunday's game. How did the Seahawks dominate defensively the way they did? Sam Monson joins us at 8:30 tonight to talk about that. We want to hear from you as well. Phone lines are open, and you can ring us up right now. There's a lot to talk about. 803-0550 is the number to call. Can you tell I haven't been here in a while? 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can always reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show with things to talk about. In particular, how do you like the remade Buffalo Bills coaching staff? We can talk about that. What did you think of Super Bowl 48? We can talk about that. What do you think of Andre Reed in the Hall of Fame? Let's talk about that. Lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I mentioned with Shope and the Bulldog on our Buffalo flagship a moment ago how really impressed I am with how quickly Doug Marone and his finished off essentially his coaching staff. One more job to go. Wide receivers coach, we expect that announcement to be coming shortly. But yeah, they've done a great job, I think. And nobody, look where we were 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we ourselves were in Mobile, Alabama doing the show on Monday night, the first night there. And all of a sudden, you know, the sky was falling. Mike Patton was ready to leave to go to Cleveland. He was going to take some assistant coaches with him. And here we are 2 weeks later, and they managed to fill all the holes on defense. And I think fill them very well. When you look at it, I think they've done a good job. They have upgraded the experience level on the coaching staff. Jim Schwartz, who comes over after a long tenure as defensive coordinator for the Titans and a tenure as the head coach of Detroit, now the defensive coordinator replacing Patton. Fred Puckett, who was hired as the new linebackers coach, They replaced Jim O'Neill and Chuck Driesbach with one linebackers coach. Fred Puggich has been a coach for more than 30 years. Pepper Johnson, our guest a little bit later on this hour, replaces Anthony Weaver as the defensive line coach. Pepper Johnson spent 14 years coaching with the New England Patriots. They still, you would think, have one position to add, defensive quality control. They have the new quarterback coach that they didn't have last year. They have the new special offensive assistant, Jim Hostler, who they did not have last year. They have a wide receiver coach still to be named. But I think they've done a remarkable job over the last 2 weeks filling the holes created when Mike Pettine left to go to Cleveland. That was a setback. We talked about it a lot on this show a couple of weeks ago, especially when we were in Mobile. That was a setback at that late in January to lose your defensive coordinator and a couple of your assistants. And here they are 2 weeks later, and it's fixed with some pretty experienced guys. These are not bottom-of-the-barrel guys when you talk about Pepper Johnson and Fred Puggich and especially Jim Schwartz. These are qualified, capable, experienced, NFL experienced coaches. So I like that. I know that that's been something that Doug Marrone has been interested in, is having coaches who've been around the league a little bit, know how to develop players into NFL players, know how to turn those prospects, those young players that are on every roster now. I mean, because of the salary cap and the way things work now, nobody has a whole lot of experience on their roster. You can't lean on experienced veterans who've been in the system for years and years to teach your young players what it means to be a pro. The coaches have to do that. And I think when you look at who they've added here, Schwartz and Pepper Johnson and Puggich, and on the offensive side, Jim Hostler, they've got guys who've been around the league for a long time and know how to develop players. I think that's a very positive sign. And, again, nobody wanted to go into this offseason and say, hey, you're going to have to hire a half dozen new coaches this year. But they had to because of Pettine leaving, and I think they've done an extremely good job at it. Let us know what you think about that. Phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Outside Buffalo, the toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We can talk about the Super Bowl. I'm sure most of us would like to put it behind us. I thought it was a dreadful performance by the Denver Broncos. Didn't see that coming. I did not have a good handle on that game. I didn't know what to expect. I hadn't seen a lot of Denver and Seattle much this year. I guess a little bit more of Denver. I thought that the quarterback would give Denver the edge, the experience of quarterback. That wasn't the case at all. The quarterback came up extremely small, Peyton Manning. But more than anything, it was defensive dominance by Seattle. And I guess I didn't know how good their defense was. I expected more from Denver, though. I expected during the course of a game when things were not going well, I expected them to change their offensive approach, to find a way to protect Peyton Manning better. That was a big issue, the lack of pass protection, the fact that he was under the gun every time he stepped back to throw. I thought the Broncos would be able to adjust and find a way to get people open downfield, and to maybe open it up a little bit, throw a little bit deeper passes. But they never did. They never made the adjustment. And how about the offensive coordinator for Denver, Adam Gase, who was the hot prospect for Cleveland's head coaching job? Do you think the Browns are happy now they didn't wait for him because they were on the verge of losing Mike Pettine? But he did not distinguish himself at all in that game against Seattle the other day. Just very disappointing, very weak performance by the Broncos. Yeah, I think the NFC did have an edge all season long, and that was displayed in the game on Sunday, the Super Bowl game. The NFC had the bigger, stronger defensive teams than the AFC had, and that was certainly on display in the Super Bowl. Just a very bad performance. We got spoiled over the last several years. We got spoiled with very competitive, tight Super Bowl games, and we had a stinker on Sunday. And speaking of stinkers, really disappointed in essentially in Troy Aikman, who never really got to the kernel of what was going on that limited Peyton Manning so much. I mean, that was the most prolific passing offense in the NFL in a long time, and they could do nothing. And the question, I'm sitting there watching the game, the question to me was, why? Why? What is Manning seeing? That's Peyton Manning. He's a Hall of Famer. What does he see that he can't figure out? What is it about Seattle's pass rush that they can't protect Peyton Manning? What is it? What's going on downfield? What sort of coverages are down there? We never got any of that at all from Troy Aikman. I thought he was as bad as Peyton Manning was. I thought Troy Aikman was the least valuable quarterback in the building on Sunday. So give us your thoughts on the Super Bowl, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And also on the table tonight, Andre Reed going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The announcement came out on Saturday evening. Andre scheduled to be with us at 8 o'clock tonight. You'll be able to phone in your comments and thoughts when he joins us, but you can phone it in right now. It is long overdue, but and then in the other sense, you should value a berth in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You don't necessarily have to go in first year of eligibility to to be honored by going in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It should be difficult to get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's what I'm trying to say. And for Andre Reed, he had to wait until his eighth year as a finalist to get in. He belongs there. His record of production is strong over the years, the last couple of years, and even into last week. You heard other Hall of Famers, Marv Levy among them, on our show last Wednesday, talk about the reasons beyond the numbers why Andre Reed belonged in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. A well-deserved honor. He will stand alongside his Buffalo Bills teammates from the Super Bowl era. He belongs there. He was an integral part of that Super Bowl team, and we're looking forward to talking with Andre, and you can too at 8 o'clock tonight. So all of that on the table tonight. The phone line's open, 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550, and you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We are live on the radio tonight until 9 o'clock, which gives us a chance to interact. And we'll start tonight with Mark in Amherst. Hello, Mark. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You got one thing right. I mean, the Super Bowl was a real stinker. It was not a very entertaining game, but throughout the playoffs and even into the Super Bowl, I couldn't help but kind of draw the parallels between what Seattle's doing now and what they did over the past two seasons to what the Bills are kind of doing, and just the way they're building their team seems like a more of an emphasis on an aggressive defense, a former college coach, a mobile quarterback, real emphasis on running the football, and it just seems like for the first time, the Bills are really keying in on what might be the new way to win in the NFL. And I was just wondering if you could touch upon maybe the similarities between the Bills now and what the Seahawks are doing currently.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Mark. Don't hang up because I want to fire a couple things back at you. There is a tendency, and it almost happened immediately after the final gun Sunday, there is a tendency to adopt what the Super Bowl champion did and say, that's the way you win in the NFL. And I don't think that's the case for any Super Bowl winner. I think there's more than one way to win a championship in the NFL. That being said, you're on to something here, and there are some similarities. And I guess if you're still on the line with us, Mark, the question I would pose to you is, what's missing from the Buffalo Bills to make them next year Seattle? And I have a few thoughts on this. You may too. I think one of the things that's missing is the Bills need more, they need better quarterback play. Russell Wilson didn't win that game Sunday, but he certainly did everything to prevent losing it, and he benefited from, you know, a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, a defense that was flying around the field. But Russell Wilson played a solid game, a very solid game, delivered the ball on time, pretty much on target. I thought he was much improved over the NFC Championship game. The Bills don't have that yet from E.J. Manuel. They may, and certainly the mobility is there. But tell me what you think about that, Mark, and maybe anything else that the Bills are missing that the Seattle Seahawks have.
Yeah, obviously the quarterback play, like you said, more consistently. But I think just the attitude that Seattle brings and the confidence they have when they play defense. I mean, it really is an aggressive defense, both in scheme but also in philosophy. And I think the Bills, to get over that hump, just need to gain a little more confidence and to win consistently and just play with a killer instinct. It seems like a lot of times last year they second-guessed each other based on play calls or based on performances, and that might have contributed to a few of the injuries they had, just not playing with as much confidence that they may have had if they were winning the organization. So I think a lot of it just comes with winning, but overall just having a philosophy and a killer instinct like Seattle does, and having the energy, and hopefully Doug Marrone can bring that energy to the team, similar to what Pete Carroll is doing, and hopefully they're on their way.
Okay. Mark, thanks for calling. You make some very good points. I think there are some similarities defensively. The Bills trying to build a big, strong secondary with big hitters, obviously Stephon Gilmore, who lost a lot of his year due to injury this year, but by the end of the year he was back to where he was a year ago and maybe even a little bit better. The Bills' defensive front, yeah, they do a good job of generating pressure with the four-man rush, which is one of the keys to Seattle's victory on Sunday. The strong running game. I mean, Seattle has a good 1-2 punch led by Marshawn Lynch. I think the Bills have potential for a very good 1-2 punch, and they need to get C.J. Spiller healthier. The Bills' run offense may be a little bit different with the dynamic dimension that Spiller provides. I don't know that Seattle has that out of their running game. I think the Seahawks have a good core of big, strong receivers, too. And, you know, they got a big boost from Harvin and his contributions on Sunday after he was basically a spectator for most of the season. But the Bills need to get better. I think the two spots, I think overall the Bills need to have a better, more effective passing game. They don't need to to be throwing it all over the field, but I think they need to have a more effective passing game in order to be a playoff contender next year. Maybe not a Super Bowl champion just yet, but at least a playoff contender. That's a good point. Got a couple of minutes left here, and then Pepper Johnson's going to join us on the show. Phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The other interesting thing that Mark said, which bears mentioning, is Seattle didn't build that overnight, right? Pete Carroll had a couple of years to get things up and running. Not a long time, but not overnight. And I think Doug Marrone and his staff are going to need to, build on what they built last year in terms of this, changing the culture, creating an atmosphere where, professionalism and winning so that, players don't come late to meetings, for example, and players approach every practice and every meeting with the same sense of purpose. I guarantee you it was not like that when Pete Carroll first came into Seattle. And that they had to change a culture there as well. I guarantee you that Pete Carroll had to instill some, discipline, for lack of a better term, and getting everybody on the same page and everybody committed to doing all the little things it takes to be a championship team. And it was not an overnight thing in Seattle, as it is not going to be here in Buffalo. But Mark makes a pretty good point about that. Yeah, I think there could be some similarities there. We'll find out. All right, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are live tonight on the radio from 7 to 9 p.m. And coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Andre Reed will join us, scheduled to join us. The Bills now Hall of Fame wide receiver, just elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Saturday night. We'll be talking live with Andre at 8 o'clock, and you can ring up with your comments and questions, your congratulations as well. Going to take another look at the Super Bowl coming up in the 8 o'clock hour with Sam Monson, who is an analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. He's done the analytics breakdown of what went down there in the Meadowlands of New Jersey on Sunday. We'll talk with Sam Monson about the game coming up at 8:30. But coming up next, one of the two new coaches named just last Friday to the Buffalo Bills, Pepper Johnson. You know that name. Had a long and distinguished career playing linebacker in the NFL, most of that time with the New York Giants, where he won a couple of Super Bowls, including one against the Buffalo Bills. And has spent the last 14 years as an assistant coach with the New England Patriots on Bill Belichick's staff. We're going to talk with Pepper Johnson here in studio when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. And as you know, lots of coaching changes here at One Bills Drive over the last few weeks. And one of the moves brings a new defensive line coach to the Buffalo Bills. Pepper Johnson named to the job last Friday night. And Pepper Johnson is in the studio with us. Thanks for coming by here. We appreciate you coming in here tonight.
John, I'm glad to be here.
A big move for you after 14 years with the New England Patriots. How does that feel?
My legs are still shaking a little
bit. Yeah, I bet.
But I'm excited. I am so excited. Always have been a fan of Doug and the Buffalo Bills and just getting the opportunity to just spread my wings and get from up under the shadows, of Coach Belichick. And so it's a good thing. It's a good opportunity.
In your profession in NFL coaching, when a guy is one place for that long, 14 years, guy typically stays that long. It's unusual to move after something like that.
Exactly. Well, I'm growing. And I'm a very ambitious person. I started off coaching, and I moved around a little bit while I was there with New England, starting off with the linebackers. Well, starting off with Andy Katzenmoyer. That's a long story.
What, you just had him
yourself? That was my project. Okay. Yeah, I had to learn Andy Katzenmoyer. Then I graduated to coaching the inside linebackers and took the linebackers over. And then eventually the defensive line for 8 years, and then I went back to the linebackers the last couple of years.
And why were you bouncing around? Was that at your request, or did Coach Belichick want you to try something else?
Well, early on it was Coach Belichick with me graduating. But I went to the defensive line to try to help out our defensive coordinator, Romeo Crennel, because he was the defensive coordinator / defensive line coach, and just to give him a stand-up job so he can a walk-around defensive coordinator, that's what a lot of people refer to him as, so that he didn't have to worry about specifically the defensive line. I could take over those responsibilities, and I knew a lot about it. And so that was suggestion from myself. Coach Belichick approved it. And then going back to the linebackers, I thought we just needed another push from the linebackers, that communication-wise, and I'm experienced. I haven't played linebacker for 13 years under the same system. And so Coach Belichick thought it was a great move for us.
And tell me about the Katzenmoyer experience. What made that interesting for you?
Well, the rumors that was very bad gave the kid a bad reputation coming from Ohio State, you know.
And you were a fellow Buckeye, obviously.
Fellow Buckeye, and I was one of the I wanted to condemn him. But it was bad. First of all, I started off with the number 45. And, you know, guys strongly believe Archie Griffin number should have been retired. And the rumors were that he demanded to have 45 before he would come to Ohio State. And it's so untrue. And just talking to him, and it's so untrue. And it was, you know, unfair for him. That experience, it only lasted like 10 weeks with his injury. But it gave me a lot of time to get to know that kid and deal with him. And it just wiped the slate clean from the dirty rumors that
sure.
I had.
Yeah. Are you looking at someday? I mean, you said you want to move up. Are you thinking coordinator someday? Is that the next logical step for you?
I would love to, because in a sense, those 13 years that I played in the NFL, that I graduated to calling a lot of the defenses and having the responsibility of running our defense and being this extension of the coach from the sideline. It's a dream of mine. It's a goal of mine that I would like to. But right now, I have to deal with this defensive line.
Yeah. You know, it struck me the last couple of weeks, Pepper, when the Bills here dealt with Mike Patton leaving and taking a couple of assistants. And it's unfortunate when it happens. But this is kind of the engine that moves the NFL. Coaches looking for their next opportunity, setting up a system somewhere else. Somebody else gets a chance to be coordinator or position coach. It kind of is a necessary part of the NFL coaching, isn't it?
It seems to be.
Yeah.
Like you rarely get to. I've seen a lot of faces come and go at my previous job, and now I became one of those guys that I moved on, and you learn a lot more of the game. Just today alone, just listening to the conversation of the other guys on the defensive staff, the terminology, it's still football, but it's just some of the terminology the thought process and some of the game planning that guys and suggestions that guys are having, it's different for me now, because I've been in a certain structure for so long.
We're in the studio with Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. You played 13 years. You came into the league as a second-round pick with the New York Giants, and you walk in there, and there's Bill Parcells.
Yes.
What was that like?
he told us all, this is 1986, he told us all that he didn't need any of us.
That's how welcome he started, to the NFL.
Yes, that's how he started it off. He said he didn't. The New York Giants didn't need any of the guys. They made it to the playoffs. This is a train, a locomotive that was steamrolling. And the best thing, his best advice to us was that you can just, if you got enough speed and you got enough heart, then catch on to the caboose, because this train is moving.
How do players respond to that?
And the guys, everybody was tentative and paying attention to him. And you felt like, hey, any bad move, you might get cut, you know, and left out to dry. And so I started running.
Yeah. Could that approach work now in the NFL,
no.
Do you think, Pepper? Not at all?
But you know, some guys. Let me not say no, period. I think some guys believe in working hard and to the day they drop. And you have some guys that they feel like a lot of things, the opportunities are, they deserve them. Like, they're supposed to be given opportunities, and they're going to make it some form or fashion, whether it's here or somewhere else, and not just looking at it as it's a privilege. It's an honor to be in the NFL and getting the opportunity to play. Because if you really think about it, you look back at your drive and your journey through high school and college. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of friends I know for myself that wanted the opportunity to play in the league, and they didn't get the opportunity to play in the league. And so I think those, a lot of guys that are in the league, that they should look at it as an honor.
You walk into that linebacker room, and there's Lawrence Taylor sitting in the linebacker room. And what was that like playing with LT?
He called. That was a wonderful experience. Like a lot of people, you hear all the negative stuff about Lawrence, and no one ever really addressed how he was as a teammate. He's a great teammate. He assisted you. Now, for my first year, him and Harry Carson, they never called me Pepper Johnson. They never said my name whatsoever. They didn't even call me Johnson. It was just Rookie. A Rook. Rook this. We could be out to dinner, the linebacker dinner. It was still Rook. A Rook, go get me a drink. A Rook, go whatever. And it was the same thing. It was amazing. Then we got into the playoffs. Even out at the Super Bowl, they called me Rook.
And you got in the Super Bowl your first year?
My first year. Yeah, my first season. And it was still Rook until after that ball game. And you know, we came back as a team and all that stuff, and they finally referred to me as Pepper.
Wow. And then you went back to the Super Bowl 4 years later and met up against the Buffalo Bills with the K-Gun offense. And
yes.
Didn't really struggle that much with the K-Gun offense. At least your team kept that offense off the field in that game.
Well, we collectively. Like, we played them strong, I guess, better than a lot of other people, but it was a team defense. Even our offense and our the special teams, it was a team deal because, like you said, they wasn't out there on the field a lot, so that really helped us out tremendously. That you didn't have to see Thurman Thomas every play and Andre Reed every play, so that really helped us out defensively.
Thomas, many people in these parts believe that if that kick goes through, Thurman Thomas is probably the MVP of that game.
Oh, yeah, I'm quite sure. The guy is amazing. He's done a lot of things, and I'm glad I don't have to chase him anymore.
Are you aware, you probably are, that Coach Belichick's game plan from that game, Super Bowl 25, is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah. The game plan shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. All of us should be in the Hall of Fame.
Good point.
Made it work. But, I at that given time and with the K-Gun and everything, I'm quite sure that's the reasoning for it, you know, because of just slowing them down. I think they scored 50 points, you know, the first game of the playoffs.
51-3 the week before, yeah.
Exactly. So to slow them down to 19 was was huge.
We're talking with Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. You played in the league for a while after that, and then you got into coaching. When did you start thinking of coaching as your career after you got off the playing field?
Pretty much when I was in college at
Ohio
State.
You knew that all along?
I never expected at this level. I wanted to go back and coach my high school. I tried to pick the brains of everybody that I respected. As a player. So I talked to Reggie White. I talked to Richard Dent. I talked to Seth Joyner, you know, from defensive guys. Cornelius Bennett, you know, from another linebacker point of view. I talked to receivers. I talked to defensive backs. Just if I can get some of that knowledge and give it to some high school kids and that still have that drive, I felt like, hey, I'm going to be this great high school football coach just with that knowledge. And so I came and I did the minority internship with Coach Belichick after I retired, and just wanted to get some information on organization wise on how to organize the your staff and practice schedules and all that stuff like that. And I felt like over my playing career, that I picked brains of enough worthy guys that it would help me. And I think Coach Belichick knew if I got back involved with football that I was going to stay. So that first year in 2000, we may have won 5 games. I don't know. And I was I felt really bad because I didn't think that I helped enough, that I couldn't really exert myself and spreads, you know, not just working with Andy, with Katzenmoyer, but just more with the linebackers, more defensively. I had a lot more to say. And he caught me like week 12 and asked me if I wanted to stay and coach. And I couldn't really give my answer then because my son at the given time was getting ready to start high school. And not raising him in the house together. He's born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, in 1986, which was an awesome year for me. So yeah. The birth of my son and won the Super Bowl. But anyway, I wanted to talk to him because my plan was to go back to Columbus and help him out, bring him along in his high school career. So I talked with him for a couple of days, and matter of fact, when I first told him, he was like, "Dad, go coach.
Yeah.
I'm going to be okay. You got me this far and from a long distance and flying in." And Coach Belichick allowed me to go back and forth as I wanted to. So I coached the very first year. We go and win the Super Bowl again. And I'm like, history is repeating itself.
Yeah.
And Otis Smith and Ty Law was like, "Pep, it's one thing you haven't done in your playing career was repeat. You have to coach another year." So the rest is history. I started another year and still didn't repeat. Matter of fact, we didn't even make the playoffs in 2002. And then I finally got the repeat.
Pepper, you played under Bill Belichick. You coached alongside Bill Belichick. As you can imagine, Belichick is much discussed around these parts after all that the Patriots have done against the Buffalo Bills over the years. What would you tell Bills fans about the mystique of Bill Belichick? Is that a real thing? What should Bills fans know about Bill Belichick?
He is what you see.
Because
that is him. I mean, it's like his mind is constantly going. He's always thinking. He's always trying to stay 3 steps, 3 months, 3 years ahead. So lots of times you can't really take him personal because he have walked past me plenty of times in the hallway and don't say hello or with his head down or whatever. And I know a lot of players when they first experience Bill, they think this guy is dry, that he don't address anybody. Did I do anything wrong? Is he mad at me? I'm like, trust me, if he's not talking to you, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
it's just being Bill. But as soon as he stops you in the hall and he starts talking to you, that's when you need to pay attention and see what you've been doing wrong in the past or out there on the field, because something is coming.
When the announcement came that you were leaving the Patriots last week, you know, typically coaches will say, "We wish him well, blah, blah, blah." This statement that Belichick issued last week was pretty amazing, or actually it was almost 2 weeks ago now. Belichick said, "I am proud and honored to have spent more years of my career with Pepper Johnson than any other player or coach. Of all the people I coached or worked with, nobody has more passion and love for the game than Pepper." That's a pretty amazing statement coming from a guy who's, you know, going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, and a guy we're going to beat next year.
There you go. I like to hear that.
No, yeah. I appreciate everything, because that was Bill Belichick as a friend. That was my friend. That was the guy that patted me on the back when I first came into the league and shook my hand and everything. So 26 years really 27 years of just knowing the guy. And 26 years, 13 as a player and 13 coaching, you kind of grow a connection there.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a love, and I don't even have to mention how much I respect the respect that I have for him. And Bill, it was tough. It was tough for him. It was tough for me to walk away. But at the same token, he knows the passion that I have for the game. And I could not do that there with the Patriots, that I needed to come out here and bring a Super Bowl championship to Buffalo.
Pepper Johnson, our guest, the Bills' new defensive line coach. How do you feel about being back coaching D linemen this year?
Oh, it's definitely a challenge, because I got a group that I'm just going to try not to screw up.
Yeah, there's some talent there.
Yeah, it's a lot of talent there. And I watch from afar, and now I get the opportunity to kind of steer it in a certain direction, and I hope we have a lot of success, and I plan on having a lot of success with these guys.
Have you had a chance to reach out to any of these players, talk to any of these players?
These guys have had me, like, working.
Yeah. What are you doing here? What routine have they got you in here?
I just came in today, so I'm talking mess, but I just came in, and it's been nonstop that, you know, with Swartz, that we're trying to get ourselves ready for when the players do come in on how we're going to address certain issues.
In the course of our 12-minute conversation here, you've mentioned beating Belichick twice and winning Super Bowls here. I think you're going to be a fan favorite if you keep talking like that.
Well, it's one thing, as an ex-player and coaching in this league, it's one thing about talking about it. A lot of people can bring it up, and especially it's easy to say during the off season. It's another thing to go out and do it. And I can only have any success from the players. You know, if the players are having success, then I'm having success. If I can't go out there and play anymore, so I need for these guys to jump on the board. It's a fine line between talent from every team that's in the league. I strongly believe that, and I can see that every week when we, you know, when you go out there and play every Sunday. And to me, it's a difference on the players buying into the system and playing for something other than themselves, whether they plan for the head coach, whether they plan for the position coach. You want them playing for each other, and you want all the guys to feel like this is a memorable moment. This is a time in their lives that they don't want to ever forget. We don't have enough time through this whole season that I could tell you about stories about Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson and Carl Banks, my experience with those guys, Leonard Marshall, and some of the friends that I've made over the course of 13 years of playing football, whether it was teammates or some guys that you played against. So those experiences you take with you after the game is all said and done, is wrapped up. And you really don't want to leave this game and walk away not saying you won a championship. I've been very blessed. I have five. And I am trying my best to get another ring on that other hand. And it's I didn't stumble the last couple of times in the Super Bowl. It was once upon a time I was like, let's just get to the bowl,
yeah,
and I'll show you how to win it. But now it's been struggling a little bit. So this new door, I have a lot of energy in this new opportunity. I'm excited about this season.
We're excited to have you. Thank you very much for coming in here tonight.
You.
Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach. I think they're in pretty good hands there. How about the passion? How about the intensity? How about mentioning at least twice, I think, that he wants to beat Belichick twice. I think he mentioned he wants to win a Super Bowl here. Make no mistake about it, Pepper Johnson is all in on this Buffalo Bills coaching staff. Really had a good time talking with him. And if you missed that interview, it will be up at BuffaloBills.com very shortly. Pepper Johnson, did you see Bill Belichick's statement? And I brought it up with Pepper a minute ago. This is what really got me, because typically, I mean, there doesn't have to be hard feelings, but Pepper Johnson made essentially a lateral move, right, from the linebackers coach of New England to the defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills, a position coach on the defense, going from a perennial playoff contender to a team that hasn't been in the playoffs for 13 years. Sometimes there might be hard feelings. There might be some underlying subtext of acrimony between the head coach and the coach who left. Not in this case at all. Did you see Belichick's statement about Pepper Johnson's departure that came out January 22nd, so it's a couple of weeks ago now, but let me read it. This is Bill Belichick on Pepper Johnson. Quote, "I am proud and honored to have spent more years of my career with Pepper Johnson than any other player or coach. Of all the people I've coached or worked with, nobody has more passion and love for the game than Pepper. His energy and wisdom for football knows no limits. Bill Belichick saying this. He went on to say, Pepper made me a better coach in person and helped create some of the greatest moments of my career. He was a great player. He is a great player, coach, and lifelong friend. I'm sure he will enjoy continued success as he moves forward. You don't get that very often when a coach leaves one place and goes to another. I got a good feeling from Pepper Johnson being in our studio tonight, just a good sense that he's where he wants to be. Obviously, he is ambitious. He would like to be a defensive coordinator. He said as much on our show tonight. Who wouldn't? And this might be his ticket here to, you know, the next step to get out from underneath Bill Belichick's shadow to show what he can do with a very good defensive line. I mean, who wouldn't want to coach that crew? Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, Marcel Darius, three of them in the Pro Bowl. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think the Bills done a good job of filling those spots they had open on their defensive coaching staff. Well, the Hall of Fame calling for Andre Reed finally in his eighth year as a finalist, and the Hall of Fame receiver scheduled to join us next. You can phone in your comments and questions for Andre when we return after the top of the hour. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Andre Reed, when we return, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller! You can't stop him! How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, yeah. Hold hands. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We have a very special guest on the line with us right now. On Saturday night around 6 p.m., the word started to leak out. It was made official about an hour later. Andre Reed, the Buffalo Bills all-time receiver, the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Andre Reed is live on the line with us right now. If you have a comment or a question, maybe you want to issue congratulations for the Bills' new Hall of Famer. Phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Andre Reed on the line with us. Andre, congratulations. Great news Saturday night.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thanks. It's been a I got to New York on Tuesday. Had a bunch of things to do, had a couple of obligations to do, and I mean, what can I say, man? I mean, this is it's been a long time waiting. We've talked about this for what, 9 years now.
Yep,
9 years, and I'm at a loss for words. Really, I'm still having something in. Actually sitting here right now. I just left New York this morning. I'm here in Pennsylvania visiting my mom and some family here before I go back to the West Coast. But, you know, what a special time, man. It's just, you know, and the class, I mean, this class that I'm going in with are just great people. Not only were they great football players, but, I've gotten to know them, a lot in the last couple of days. And I'm proud to be, in this class. And just proud to be a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, John, when I came out there on the NFL Honors there, when I came on the stage, there was, you know, a lot of people in the stands, you know, in the audience. And my eyes fixated on three people, actually, out of all those people. And it was Jim Thurman, Bruce, and Marv Levy. And I kind of picked them out. And I didn't know where they were sitting, and I picked them out of everybody in there.
Wow.
And that just shows you, man, how much it meant to me, you know, to have those guys there on my behalf, man. It was really special. And the elation and everything else, I mean, I can't even again, it's going to take me a couple more days for this really to sink in. But I'm proud to, you know, represent, you know, all of Western New York and the fans and their support, you know, for me over the years, and the Buffalo Bills organization. I mean, they've been tremendous in this whole process. And, you know, sometimes the things don't happen the way you want them to. Sometimes you got to wait. My dad always said patience is a virtue, and good things come to those who wait. And, you know, I knew someday this was going to come, but you never know. And
you know, Saturday was a real special day for me, and you know, I'll definitely cherish it the rest of my life for sure.
Andre, tell us about Saturday, and especially late Saturday afternoon, early Saturday evening. How did you get word? What were you doing, and what was it like when you first got word that you had you'd made it finally?
Well, I was, you know, the Hall of Fame actually brought us all in there. They brought all the Hall of Famers in as a gift for the NFL Honors Show.
Right.
And we all were put in a, we all were in a hotel around Radio City Music Hall there. And we sat in there, you know, I got to the hotel like around 3-4 o'clock. And I was going to find out by 5. Between 5 and 5:30, I was going to know yes or no if I was in or not. And I was telling my family this, you know, I was sitting there and got a couple texts, and you know, my guys are like, you know, got a couple texts from some people. Actually, I got a text from Jim Trotter, who was in the room, and Jim's a good friend of mine, and he gets a vote. So I got a little text from him with a little smiley face. And then about 15 minutes later, I got another text from him. He said, "You made the final five," with another smiley face. And then about 15 minutes after that, Joe Horgan, who's a Buffalo guy, called me on my phone, and he said, hey, Andre, this is Joe Horgan from the Hall of Fame." I said, "Hey, Joe, what's up?" And he said, "Congratulations, welcome to the Pro Football Hall of Fame."
Wow.
That was it.
What pretty cool moment, pretty neat moment. Even as it was leaking out, you probably got to really hear it from the guy, from Joe Horgan, before you believe it, I guess, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, I talked to Joe over the years about all this, and Tammy Owens, and the last couple of days have been, you know, all Hall of Fame protocol you go through, and I knew this was going to happen, you know, between because Bruce and Jim and Thurman and a couple other guys I know, Chris Dolman, John Randall, they all told me that this is the process you go through. They told me this is the process, and I said, yeah, you know, I know it's going to be pretty long and it's going to be tiring, but, you know, I think you kind of wait your whole life for this, and you know, to be recognized as one of the best that ever did it, it's pretty special. And, you know, I want to give a big shout-out to Steve Casper, because I, you know, Steve really said some good stuff about me, and that's, you know, that's class. And I, you know, I had a show with Steve all year on Sirius this year, and we really developed a good rapport on the radio. So, you know, I want to, you know, thank him for all the good words he said about me.
Andre Reed, the Bills' new Hall of Famer, on the line with us. Phone line's open, 803-0550, the number. Let's take a couple calls. Here is Tom in North Tonawanda. Tom, you're on the air with Andre Reed. Go ahead.
Hey, Andre, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. A little tired, but I'm all right.
Congratulations. Listen, always been a big fan, big supporter. You've seemed to have been the underdog to get in the Hall. And when I heard the leak out of the text on Saturday, I called my sister and told some friends, and I couldn't have been happier. And I have yet to watch any of the Hall of Fame speeches, any of the inductees, because that's not really a thing I do, but I will be watching when they induct you, because you deserve it, and I couldn't be happier for you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Tom. Nice talk.
Thanks for your call, Tom. And, you know, he made a good point, Andre. It does seem like in your career, you know, and you came out of a little school in Pennsylvania, Kutztown, a fourth-round pick. In your career, you were always sort of fighting for respect. That extended over into this process, too, for the Hall of Fame, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, when in 85, D2 wasn't really big time in the NFL. I mean, if you look at all the rosters now in the league, there's a lot of D2 guys. I mean, Seattle won a Super Bowl, and there's some D2 guys on their team the other day. So I think I represent Division II. You know, there's some other guys in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Jerry Rice is 1AA, but this really opens up the floodgates for different stuff, and I'm glad to be a part of it, man. I mean, you know, my whole career has been about getting respect from my peers and all that, and I've gotten the respect from them. And this is just a validation of all the hard work and all that stuff that I've done. Look here, man, we got 5-6 Hall of Famers that I play with, and a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame owner. You know, Buffalo should be just elated right now, because I don't think they probably never thought that this would ever happen. And, you know, right now is going to be my job and everybody else's job in the Hall to try to get Steve in there. And we're going to do whatever it takes to try to get him recognized like he should be. So there's no doubt about that.
Andre Reed on the line with us. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's a call from Dave in Williamsville. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Congratulations, Andre. It was a pleasure watching you, and almost, you know, it was a privilege as well. And you kind of had me at the Cleveland playoff game where you took that pass and you just kind of shot off like a cannon and got that touchdown. And I thought, you know, this is a team that really can be reckoned with. Maybe a little bit before that, but you made an awful lot of you know, pretty good defensive backs look pretty foolish at times, including a lot of those Miami secondaries. So.
Oh, believe me, I'll be calling Lewis Oliver and those guys next.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was great watching you.
Yep. Thanks for your call. We'll go to Chris in Buffalo. Hi, Chris. You're on the air with Andre Reed. Go ahead.
Hello. Hey, how's it going? Congratulations, Andre.
Thanks, man.
I really felt like, in a way, that I really felt your pain over the last 3-4 years, because every day during the Hall of Fame, yeah, I mean, when it came time, around that time, I would be sickening. Then, you know, every time, then a couple of years when you got snubbed, I was like, oh, man, like kind of like ruined my whole day in itself. But this year, I even, like, early, like hours prior to the announcement, I watched your highlights on YouTube and everything. So I don't know if that helped out or any, but it did work, and you got in this year. So
thanks, I'm real proud of that.
Thanks for your call. Andre, you know, we've talked to you. I know you answered questions over the last few years about the logjam at wide receiver. Do you think that really existed? And do you think that had, you know, was it just time when they put in Chris Carter last year and maybe now? Yeah. Do you think that was what was at play over the last few years here?
Well, I mean, you know, hindsight's 20/20 right now. I mean, of course, you know, there's so many worthy guys that deserve to be there. You know, guys before me that are on the ballot, and they never get to pass the final. They don't ever get to 25. I mean, guys like Sterling Sharp and Henry Ellard and Irving Fryer, Jimmy Smith, Rod Smith, all these guys that are, you know, such great players, that they don't even get the recognition that they deserve. And it's sad. It is sad that that those guys, you know, deserve to be there, and they may never get to the final. They never may get to 25. And for me to be in the position I was for, you know, 8 years in a row, and then be in the final 10 4 out of the last 5 years, you know, I'm a receiver. I know all those stats. So it's a travesty that those guys get, you know, they get passed over because of, you know, the way the game has changed and everything like that. And the logjam is going to continue.
Yeah.
So, the next guy really should be Tim. Tim Brown should be the next guy in line, because that's my era. You know, I think Marvin is in a different era, you know, with T.O. and Moss and Isaac Bruce and Hines Ward and all these other guys are going to be coming up. It's going to be even more difficult, I think, for them guys when they're going against each other than it was for me, Chris, Tim, Jerry, and Michael Irvin going against each other, because the game has changed so dramatically to more of a passing game that, you know, what is going to be the criteria to put a wide receiver in there? So,
yeah, good point. I was worried that might happen. You know, Marvin Harrison's numbers are so big that you worry that some guys in that room might just look at the numbers and
yeah,
vote that
way. Yeah, there probably was guys that looked at numbers. But, you know, my line of work was totally different from anybody that was on that ballot.
Yeah.
You know, I just had a different knack of, you know, what I did. That was it.
Call here.
I've been recognized for it.
Yep. Mike in Buffalo has a thought for Andre Reed. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, first off, I think Cam's going to be packed this year, because anyone who didn't make the earlier Halls of Fame for the Bills, with the exception of Steve Tasker, and who knows when they're going to put him in, I don't see a Buffalo Bill going in the next 20 years. So I think it's going to be pretty busy there. But Andre and Murph, I want to ask you guys both. They always compare quarterbacks by numbers. You know, Warren Moon threw for 50,000 yards, including 10 in the CFL and all that stuff. But it's the receivers that make those yards. So why is there discrimination against wide receivers? They're the ones making the good number.
Do you think there is discrimination against wide receivers, Andre?
I don't know, man. You know, again, you can say whatever you want. There's 23 guys. You know, Chris Carter yesterday, you know, he was at the little luncheon we were at, and he kind of briefed us on what, you know, what to expect and things like that and what he went through last year. And, You know, there's only 287 guys right now, 160 that are living. So out of 25,000 players that ever went through the league in 95 years or 94 years, there's only 287 that get that distinction. So maybe somebody might say that there's a discriminatory thing. I never said that. In all the years I've been up, I never said, well, they're discriminating against the wide receivers. You know what? That's the way they do it. Hey, sometimes you want to, if you want to respect it, cool. If you don't, you know, I never really said anything about it. I can't do anything about it regardless if I say anything or not. So I just let the process take its own, you know, its own road and go with it that way.
Yeah.
You know, right now, because I'm in there, I'm not going to say, well, yes, it is discriminatory. Because right. I don't believe it is. I think they have they got a hard enough task just to whittle it down to 15 guys, no matter what position it is. It's hard, man.
Yeah.
NFL Hall of Fame, it's hard to get in.
Don't you think it should be hard to get in, Andre?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if it isn't hard, then you know we wouldn't be talking and discussing it like it is.
Right. One more call here. We'll squeeze in one more for Andre Reed from Tom in Niagara Falls. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Congratulations, Andre. I just wanted to ask one question. Did you playing in the NFL and as well you played have any impact on your college for recruiting players?
You mean did
what was that question?
I think you want to know again? If you're playing in the NFL helped out Kutztown State as far as
I definitely believe that. That's a good question because you know Kutztown is that little small school in Pennsylvania. There, there's only three or four players that ever came out of there and went to the NFL, and me and John Mobley, Doug Dennison, Bruce Harper, a couple other guys have some stints in other places, but it probably has. You know, I haven't gotten a call from them yet because you know it's kind of relatively new here, but. It probably has in its own little way. In what manner, I don't know. But, you know, this could be better recruiting. You never know.
Andre, you have done a little bit of coaching over the last couple of years in college all-star games in the month of January. Do you see yourself as a coach in the future? I mean, now you've got almost a part-time job with this Hall of Fame thing this year, but do you see yourself continuing on with a little bit of coaching in the future?
John, I actually do because I really enjoyed myself in California out here where I live at the NFLPA Bowl. I really enjoyed myself in a couple other bowl games that I've been in. And I really enjoyed myself in Kansas City last year,
right.
You know, with Andy Reid and his staff. Being back in the pro game as a coach and as a player, I'm sure if I want to pursue it, I can do that. Right now, I wouldn't say it's on the back burner, but it's definitely a possibility. I'm sure I'm going to be busy within the next 7 months here getting prepared for Canton in August. But, you know, the door is open. So it's just, you know, Canton opened up and this other door is going to open up. So, you know, I always say when one door closes, another one opens up. So I'll just have to see if that's really what I want to do and what's the best situation.
Have you given any thought to who your presenter might be, Andre?
You know what, John, I did, and I talked about it. Actually, today they were passing out sheets and stuff, and I was like, well, I got a feeling I want to know who my presenter is, so I told him, and I'm sure he's listening. He might be listening, and I think you probably know who I'm talking about. So I probably will make that decision within the next week or so, and, you know, he's really high on the list, and he would be great.
I won't start guessing because I think I know where you're going with that.
Yeah.
Last thing, Andre, you've been there at the Hall of Fame weekend before at the enshrinement ceremonies, and I've been there too. I would tell any Bills fan, and the earlier caller referenced it, it is a special weekend, and you've been there when you know Kelly and Marv and Bruce and Thurman and your teammates have gone in. It's a pretty cool weekend for any professional football fan, is it? I mean, it's really there's nothing like it in professional football that weekend.
Nothing. And I really got a really good briefing of it, you know, in the last couple of days with the Hall of Fame staff and people that were in New York here at the Super Bowl. Being there as a fan and then seeing I saw my teammates go in there and. I always dreamed about me one day being on the other side of that. They do a fabulous job, the Hall of Fame, of presentation. of what the whole week means, what it means to the city of Canton, what it means to the fans. It is a special weekend. It's a special place, man. It's hallowed ground. And I think, this August is going to be not only special, it's going to be unprecedented, because you're going to have four or five guys up on that stage that play together that are all Hall of Famers. And I couldn't even fathom. I mean, if you were to ask me, is that a picture you thought you were taking? I would laugh at you.
Yeah.
But, they do a great job of presenting the whole Hall of Fame week. And I'm happy to be a part of it, happy to represent the Hall of Fame and everybody else, you know, the fans, my friends, all those that supported me over the years. It's for them, you know, it's for them. My family, it's definitely for them. Like I said, I'm here sitting down with them having dinner, and they're not even sitting on the chairs, they're still floating.
Yeah.
That's a special thing because I know they're proud of what I did and what I represent. So, and that's what makes me proud.
Well, Andre, it's a great honor. We appreciate you taking so much of your night tonight, and I was glad that a couple of fans were able to call and let you know what they think. And I'm sure that you got to kind of take a couple of deep breaths there after the last few days. We appreciate you carving out a little time for us tonight. Congratulations again, Andre. It's great news.
Thanks, man. You know I was going to get you, John, no matter what.
Thank you. Thanks, Andre.
You got it.
Andre Reed, the 10th Buffalo Bill elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And you should mark your calendar now. It's Canton, I'm guessing, from here, 3 hours, 3.5 hours at most. It's just, you know, you go to Cleveland and turn left, essentially. You should mark your calendar. Saturday, August 2nd, Andre and the class of 2014. It is a great class going in this year, obviously. They usually are. When you think about Derek Brooks and Claude Humphrey, Michael Strahan, Aeneas Williams, Walter Jones, Ray Guy. Saturday, August 2nd is the date, and you know the drill. There's a whole weekend of ceremonies. There's a parade earlier in the day. There's the enshrinement ceremony typically on a Saturday evening, Saturday night in Fawcett Stadium down there in Canton. Great place and a really good weekend, and now you got a reason to go. If you're looking for ticket information or more information on the weekend itself, you can go to profootballhof.com/enshrinement. They have all the information you need about the enshrinement ceremony, but the date is Saturday, August 2nd, when Andre Reed goes in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Our thanks to him for joining us tonight. Can you imagine what the last few days have been like for him since he got the word on Saturday afternoon? Can you imagine how many calls he's had from well-wishers, text messages from friends and acquaintances, people looking for this, looking for that, interviews like this one? We really appreciate him taking the time out and doing that for us tonight. When he finally gets to go to his hometown in, Allentown, and kind of relax with his family, and then he comes in and does 15, 20 minutes with us on the radio show. We really appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to look at the Super Bowl from a football analytics eye. We're going to talk with Sam Monson, who is an analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. He has written up the Super Bowl game, what went wrong for the Denver Broncos. Torpedoed, he says. Sam Monson, analyst for Pro Football Focus, coming up next on the show. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are a couple of days removed from Super Bowl 48, the Seattle wipeout of the Denver Broncos 43-8. The folks at ProFootballFocus.com have dug into the game, dug into the video, and have published their analytics account of what went on there Sunday. And on the line with us right now, all the way from Ireland, is an analyst for ProFootballFocus.com, a frequent guest on our show, Sam Monson. Sam, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
When you reviewed the Super Bowl video and you wrote your article, Super Bowl 48 Torpedoed, you called it, you said the game was a, quote, strange mix of by the book and major surprise. What did you mean by that, Sam?
Yeah, I think Seattle should have always been the favorites. I was surprised when Denver was favored, you know, in Vegas and by an awful lot of pundits as well. But the more I looked at the matchup before the game, it always looked as if that Seattle D was kind of tailor-made to slow down, if not shut down, the Denver offense. So I think when they were going to do that, they were going to hold them to, you know, under 20 points. They were going to keep it tight. At that stage, I think Seattle is probably the favorite. You know, they had more things going for them on the other two phases of the ball. But I think they were always likely to probably win. What was surprising was the blowout. I think, you know, things started to go wrong for Denver from that first snap, obviously. And then it just snowballed and it got worse and worse. And, you know, the encounter between their high-octane offense and Seattle's punishing defense went about as I expected it to. But there were just so many other things that went wrong for the Broncos as well.
Yeah, and you can almost ascribe the blowout factor to, you know, a defensive touchdown, a special teams touchdown, a safety. I mean, there's 16 points right there that makes the score look a lot worse than it really was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you get those games every now and again in the NFL where it's just one thing after another. One team, for whatever reason, just isn't at the races. Things go wrong and, you know, one thing leads to another and it just piles on top and suddenly you're 20, 30 points down. And it's just a shame that it happened in the Super Bowl.
In your article, you cite a quote that running back Marshall Faulk had to say on the NFL Network following the game, which I think kind of encapsulates what you're trying to say, right? The way Marshall Faulk put it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he said that sometimes the ball bounces to the opposition. Sometimes they make it bounce their way. But in this game, both things happened. You know, the Broncos just couldn't catch a break, but the Seahawks did everything possible to capitalize on it.
Yeah, and you wind up with 43-8. Sam Monson, our guest from ProFootballFocus.com, is an analyst. When you wrote before the game, Sam, in your analysis about the game, You kind of, this is foreshadowing, I think. You said the Seattle defense, they're not going to try to confuse Peyton Manning, outsmart him, use smoke and mirrors. They're going to do what they always do, line up the way they play defense and dare you to be better than they are. That's how it played out. They didn't use smoke and mirrors. They didn't have any tricks up their sleeve, really, did they?
No, I think that was what made this matchup so interesting is that, you know, the book on Peyton Manning used to be that you had to try and confuse him. You had to show him one thing, do something else. Try and get inside his head, try and be more creative than he's going to be on offense. And Seattle just don't do things that way, and they were never really going to. They show you more or less what they're going to do on every single snap, and they just try and beat you to the punch, and that's what they did with the Broncos. They made things tough for what Manning likes to do and basically dared the Broncos to execute perfectly all through the game, and obviously that didn't happen.
What about Seattle's defense made that a bad matchup for the Denver Broncos, Sam?
I think that they bring an awful lot of pressure up front, and Peyton Manning is usually capable of neutralizing that pressure. He feels pressure coming better than any quarterback in the game and is able to instantly get rid of the ball. There's no thinking time there. He knows where to go with it when the pressure's building. But the Seahawks are uniquely capable of disrupting the timing and adding an element of hesitation into that process. They can disrupt receivers' routes. They get physical with them. They're in places that Manning wants to go with the ball. So when he feels pressure coming, all of a sudden he's not entirely sure where he wants to put the ball anymore. And suddenly you disrupt that timing and the whole offense gets derailed.
And you have the numbers to prove that, right? The numbers that show Peyton Manning's performance when the Seahawks put pressure on him.
Yeah, I mean, in the Super Bowl, his quarterback rating, I think, tumbled from 99 point something down into the 30s when they got pressure. And the big key was that they actually managed to pressure him, you know, about 150% more than his average, the average number of snaps he's pressured. So they really did execute their game plan to perfection.
And they did it. The Seahawks did it without sending a blitz. I can recall maybe two or three blitzes during the course of the game, a testament to how solid they were up front.
Yeah, I think their total tally was six times they sent the blitz, but you're right. Otherwise, it was purely front four pressure. They really didn't have to dial up extra men, and that, again, only helps what they were doing on the back end. It enabled them to keep everyone they want to keep in coverage where they want to keep them and just generally disrupt the pass combinations and the route combinations.
Sam, the pressure up front was one thing, but I thought the guys on the back end of Seattle's defense, the secondary, played extremely well, and that was part of the bad matchup for the Denver Broncos too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in guys like Richard Sherman and in Byron Maxwell as well, who doesn't get nearly enough credit, I think, those guys are almost impossible to beat deep. And, you know, when you add Earl Thomas into that equation, who's got as good a range as anybody from that deep free safety position, you basically take away a huge portion of what an offense wants to do, and you limit them to all the underneath stuff. And the difficulty there is that the offense knows that they're never going to get a huge chunk of yardage. They're going to have to do things slowly, methodically, you know, piece by piece. And when you get in a hole and you know you still have to crawl back bit by bit, that's a huge amount of pressure to execute perfectly.
You know, you mentioned some of the guys in the secondary. One of your colleagues there on the analysis team at ProFootballFocus.com mentioned Cam Chancellor, the big safety for Seattle, is possibly the MVP of that game Sunday. What did you think?
Yeah, I think Cam Chancellor was absolutely the best player on that defense and probably the best player in the game. He set the tone from the outset, delivering, you know, huge hits across the middle. He had one of his better games, and Chancellor has actually been on fire all through the playoffs. He's had an outstanding run all the way to the Super Bowl and beyond. He should have, I think, rightly earned the MVP, even though there were an awful lot of impressive performances on that defense. And it's not to take away from Malcolm Smith, who had a great game himself, but I think Chancellor was the guy that stood out from everybody.
How did Denver manage to really get nothing after the catch? They didn't have a whole lot of receptions, but you know, they didn't get any yards after the catch in that game, which I think is something they counted on throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I think that was one of the keys to the game, was Seattle really kind of sitting on top of the roots. They knew that Denver were going to run, and making a point of coming after them and basically hitting those guys as soon as they caught the football. And, you know, Denver were going to be able to move the ball, and they did move the ball, you know, for an awful lot of the game. It's just that at the end of every one of those drives, they managed to turn the ball over. But they were moving the ball against Seattle, but it was coming in small doses, and it was coming at the cost of a hit at the end of every one of those catches.
So they're up there playing the short crossing routes. You're looking, and I was looking for something a little bit deeper, but Denver never got that going. Is that a function of the pressure they had on Peyton Manning?
Yeah, it's the pressure, and it's the kind of cover three, cover one looks that the Seahawks give you. There aren't that many holes in that defense. I think they did hit that kind of intermediate crossing pattern a couple of times, and that was probably their most successful pass pattern in the game, but you know, Seattle just made it very difficult. They made those windows extremely small, and Manning struggled to hit them.
Denver offensive lineman Orlando Franklin, he was quoted after the game as saying, "They schemed the heck out of us." Franklin had a very rough game up front, but do you see that as the case? Was it scheme that won this game, or just superior physical talent on the field?
Yeah, I really don't think there was that much scheme involved in it. There's obviously the scheme that the Seahawks run, but they didn't do too much different to what they do every other game. Their game plan worked better than the Denver game plan, and I think it was always likely to. I just think that they match up extremely well with the Broncos. And, you know, I think Richard Sherman has come out and said afterwards that the NFC Championship game was really the Super Bowl before the Super Bowl, and that, you know, there was no AFC team that really deserved to be there. But I don't think that's true. I think that Denver just match up terribly against the Seahawks and against any other team, you know, against the 49ers, against anyone else in the NFC. I think Denver would have been in extremely good shape. This was just a terrible matchup for them.
And last thing, Sam, how much of a factor emotionally, I guess, was the first play from scrimmage, the safety on the high snap over Peyton Manning's head? What impact do you think that had?
I think, you know, with hindsight, it looks like an extremely bad omen. And I think if it says anything, it is a question about how they handled or how they prepared for the noise and that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, a team that good and that capable of putting up points should be able to overcome something like that. It's obviously a bad way to start the game, and it's never going to help. But I think it would be, I think, a bit lazy to point to that as any kind of excuse for why they couldn't get anything going. I think they just, you know, they let that happen and then continued to dig themselves a hole that just got deeper.
We were all looking for more from that game, weren't we, Sam? I mean, in terms of offense from the Denver Broncos and just a more competitive game. And you probably, if you watched it live, you're probably up at 3 in the morning trying to stay with that game the other night. It was just a kind of a letdown that game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just think it's disappointing the way Denver let it get away from them. You know, the being beaten by a better side is one thing. I expected the Seahawks to win the game, but I expected it to be a close, kind of low-scoring affair. But, you know, Denver just made an awful lot of sloppy mistakes, and every one of those mistakes was punished by a Seattle score in the end. You know, there was the pick six, there was fumbles, there was Harvin, you know, making three or four guys look ridiculous on that kick return. You know, every time Denver made a big mistake, the Seahawks capitalized, and it just turned what should have been a pretty close and interesting game into a pretty ugly rout.
It was ugly. Sam, thank you very much for your analysis. Thanks for coming on the show with us tonight. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sam Monson is an analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. That's where you can read his analysis of Super Bowl 48. His article is called Super Bowl 48 Torpedoed. You can follow Sam also on Twitter at PFF_Sam. Sam Monson from ProFootballFocus.com. We've got more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. If you just joined us, you're late. You missed a heck of a show. We've had some good conversation tonight. Pepper Johnson, the Bills' new defensive line coach, was with us at 7:30. If you missed that, we've got that entire interview up right now, the audio from that interview up right now at BuffaloBills.com. I think you'd like, if you missed it, you want to listen to it. Pepper Johnson talks about how excited he is to beat Bill Belichick twice next year. He just spent 14 years on Bill Belichick's staff. He can't wait to beat him twice next year. He's talking about the Super Bowl. Didn't put a timetable on it, but that's the kind of enthusiasm you get from Pepper Johnson. If you miss the interview, check it out right now at BuffaloBills.com. We were honored to have Andre Reed on the show earlier on this hour, the Bills' brand-new Hall of Famer. Our thanks to him. He did us a solid favor. He's had a whirlwind, 3 days since Saturday. Interviews, meetings, people tugging at him left and right, and carved out some time, and you think he got a kick out of hearing from some of the Bills fans who were able to phone in at 8 o'clock. And, of course, Sam Monson with his take on Super Bowl 48. What a letdown that game was. I was kind of looking forward to the game. First play, you know, the safety, and it got worse from there. Just a terrible, terrible letdown. Somebody said those are the kind of Super Bowls we got used to in the 90s. And we got spoiled the last few years. Just a terrible, terrible game. Anyway, go to BuffaloBills.com for anything you missed on the show tonight. If you go right now, you can also see Chris Brown's video interview with Jim Monas, the Bills' director of player personnel, setting the stage for the months ahead, the combine in a couple of weeks, and, of course, the draft, which starts on May 8th. By the way, we're going to the combine again. We're going to do the radio show from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, February 19th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. The first day of our 3-day stint on the radio at the NFL Scouting Combine, so we're looking forward to that. Always a good way to turn the page and get involved in looking ahead to what's coming up in the NFL. But again, Jim Monas is up right now at BuffaloBills.com, Chris Brown's exclusive video interview with the Bills' director of player personnel. A couple of NFL notes. Richie Incognito, his suspension is over. The Miami Dolphins guard, 3 months ago imposed by the Dolphins, it ended today. He went to Twitter today to thank his friends and family and express his support for Jonathan Martin. Something's going on there. Did you see that USA Today released the incomplete 1,000 or more text messages between Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin? This all came out last November when Richie Incognito left the Dolphins, and then Jonathan Martin was the poster boy for bullying. There's much more than met the eye back last year, November 4th, when the thing entirely blew up. I haven't looked at all 1,000 text messages, but some of them that USA Today published show that the two of them, Incognito and Jonathan Martin, were sort of friends. They had a back and forth text messaging, and it suggests that Jonathan Martin participated in some of the text messages, and I don't know if he enjoyed it, but he certainly didn't shy away from it. Incognito has said all along that the two men were friends, but there's obviously some offensive language going back and forth. Definitely worth another look at the whole situation, and I'm not defending Richie Incognito. You know, not much of a success as a player, not much of a success off the field, but to be vilified the way he was last November, to be, as I said, the poster boy for bullying, that may have been a little bit over the top. And today, Richie Incognito, his suspension is over. The Dolphins owner, Stephen Ross, said last week he doesn't think Incognito or Jonathan Martin will return to the team next year. Who knows if they return at all to the NFL. Arizona Cardinals announcing tonight that Larry Fitzgerald has agreed to a restructured contract. The Cardinals say both sides officially restructured. Details not available. He was scheduled to make $12.75 in base salary this year. It's likely that that's going to be prorated over the life of the contract, and the Cardinals are able to free up some contract space for Larry Fitzgerald. Richard Sherman still talking about the Super Bowl. You can't blame him. He says the Seattle Seahawks had a pretty good idea of what plays Peyton Manning and the Broncos were going to run in Super Bowl 48. Sherman told Monday Morning Quarterback.com that Seattle secondary was able to anticipate Denver's pass routes by figuring out Manning's pre-snap hand signals during the win. Sherman said all he did was play situational football. Nothing wrong with that. That's called good coaching. That's called preparation. That's called getting ready for the game. The Cleveland Browns and their new head coach Mike Pettine continue to add to their staff. Kyle Shanahan hired as offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. Mike Pettine hired there on January 23rd to replace Rob Chudzinski. Kyle Shanahan, 34 years old, held the same job the last 4 years with the Washington Redskins under his father, Mike Shanahan. They were both fired December 30th. Kyle Shanahan was offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans a couple of seasons before that. He interviewed with the Browns on Wednesday. He had also interviewed with the Dolphins and the Ravens, and he today was named as the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. Good luck to them down there in Cleveland. Honestly, good luck. I like the Bills coaching staff a lot better than I like the Cleveland Browns coaching staff. Is that okay to say? There's some experience here. We talked about that with Pepper Johnson. I don't see that in Cleveland. Kyle Shanahan's been around. He's 34 years old. What do you know when you're 34? Well, tomorrow night, podcast, Thursday night podcast. We are back live on the radio Friday night with another two-hour radio show. But you can go to the podcast at BuffaloBills.com tomorrow right around 7 o'clock, and we should have a complete show for you there. So check that out at BuffaloBills.com. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Pete Karchus, our producer, Mike Adamack, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Podcast tomorrow, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.